Thank you, Councilor Burton. Gentlemen, thank you for subjecting to this process this evening. You've each chosen to accept Governor Lynch's nomination to the PUC. It's a civil office of very, very great authority in this state, with only three of you. It's one that requires a significant level of wisdom, and your presence here tonight makes me question whether you have that kind of wisdom. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. But it also requires an absolutely impeccable degree of honesty. In your role as a PUC commissioner, you're going to have direct control and jurisdiction over electric, telecommunications, natural gas, water, and sewer utilities as a PUC commissioner. I wonder if either of you are able to state for this gathering what the PUC's stated mission is. And I'd like you both to answer that.
I've read it before, but I tell you, I couldn't put it back verbatim to you, but I think in effect, it's to make sure that for any one of those particular services that you're talking about, that you have a reliable service provided at a reasonable price to the ratepayers. But you have to balance, it's a balancing act, because if you just cut prices, then you can end up with the utilities going out of business or cutting corners, and if the service becomes non-reliable. Obviously, you don't want to give them any more money than they need to make a reasonable profit. You have to balance all that, because if you don't give them the opportunity to make a reasonable profit, then they're going to go to the Supreme Court, and the PUC decision will get overturned. So it's a balancing act between those two.
So again, I don't have the exact language, but I'll give you my view of the mission of the Public Utilities Commission. There's a balance, certainly, but to protect and provide the best service available for the utility customers. And again, as Mike mentioned, there's a balance there. There's a long-term versus short-term, because sometimes, and this is something that the PUC grapples with and the SEC grapples with all the time, is there's the balance today, what may be the most cost-effective, beneficial compared to the long-term. Transmission lines are a great example. If you don't invest in them, you don't spend that money up front to invest in them, then later they're not going to provide that reliability that you need. So there's a balance there.
Mr. Harrington, you paraphrased the mission, and I think quite well. And Mr. Scott, you hit the nail on the head. The mission specifically is to ensure that customers of regulated utilities receive safe, adequate, and reliable service at just and reasonable rates. And a fair corollary of that statement would be that in discharging your duties, you will have an obligation to protect the public from unsafe, inadequate, and unreliable service, the cost of which is unjust and unreasonable, which is simply the corollary of the public's mission. So I have a question. Do you believe that allowing annual salaries as high as $8 million for power company executives constitutes a just and reasonable level of compensation for inclusion into the electricity consumers' rate base? And I'd appreciate just a very simple yes or no answer to that question. Trying to trap you, just a yes or no.
I don't think I could give you any yes or no question on that, because you'd have to look.
We're trying to pin you down a little.
Yeah, I know. But you'd have to look at the $8 million sounds like a huge amount of money, but it has to be put, which it is, obviously.
Yeah.
But you have to be put in context. I mean, it's the same thing. I guess you could look at any type of business. And, you know, CEOs make $8 million and a lot more sometimes.
Yeah, but not going into somebody's rate base for power. Perhaps,
well,
right?
That's what I'm asking you.
Is that a fair and just amount of money to get incorporated into your consumers, the people you are going to be bound to protect, into their customer rate base? Because that's where it's going. The head of NSTAR makes that kind of money, plus. The head of Northeast makes that money, plus. Gary Long makes $4 million, plus. And everybody in this room is paying for that. And your obligation as PUC commissioners will be to protect us from unjust charges. My question is just very simple. I would just like a simple yes or no. Is an $8 million compensation for an executive of a power company a fair and just amount of money to go into our rate base?
I'm afraid that putting on that specific, I'd have to say that that would be something, a question I couldn't answer, simply because that would come before the commission in a rate hearing, and that would be a contentious issue. And if I was to say it's unjust, then I would be predisposed biasing myself, and I could have to be recused from that.
At some point, you got to allow yourself to get pinned down so that we, as the people who you're representing, can decide whether you're a fair and impartial representative of us in this process. And unless you give us a yes or no, you're not going on the record. We want you on the record.
I can't go on the record at this time because the way it works is you have a hearing. That's going to be brought up. If you or anybody else wants to bring those questions up and ask them, the decision has to be made by what's on the public record and what came up at the hearing. And if I was to say in advance of that hearing that I think anything over $2 million or $8 million or $1 million is too much, then NU could say we want him removed because he's already decided and he's not basing it on the facts presented in the hearing. Yeah. It's a semi-judicial process, and it's sort of like a trial to some extent. You have to base it on the evidence that's brought in there during the hearing. And
that's not a question, but that's right. Mr. Scott, could I get an answer from you, sir?
I'll give you a slightly different version, but it's probably going to be the same thing. No, it doesn't strike me per se, but I would have to look at the full case that comes before us and all the facts.
A simple yes or no. Everybody in New Hampshire that's chosen to become a civil officer is required before they accept the public's trust and before they proceed to execute the duties of their office to make the following declaration, and I quote, I do solemnly swear that I will bear faith and true allegiance to the United States of America and the state of New Hampshire and will support the Constitution thereof, so help me God. This solemn commitment includes defending recently passed Article 12A, which prohibits the taking of a person's property for purpose of private development or other private use of the property. You, sir, Mr. Harrington, have already referred to the Northern Pass twice this evening as a private developer and as a private development. Clearly, the New Hampshire Constitution, Article 12A, soon to be bolstered by House Bill 648, makes it very clear private development and private projects do not have eminent domain available to them. My question to you is, would you ever vote to provide the use of eminent domain to a private development firm? And I won't embarrass you by adding the words Northern Pass onto that.
Again, I'm not at liberty to answer that question for the reasons
I
just
stated. Yes, you are, sir.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are, sir.
No.
Mr. Scott, can you answer that question for us, please?
All I can say is, again, I serve as an officer in the military, and I'm an agent of the state government. I can swear to you I will do what the law of the land requires me to do.
And support the Constitution. Is that a fair statement?
I will always support the country.
Of the country and the state, yes.
Thank you, sir.
I can make that statement as well because I've taken that oath three different times already.
Yeah, but I've asked you to extend it into the context of a private developer coming before you.
Of the state of New Hampshire at all times. But I'm not going to answer any specific questions on Northern Pass.
The next question.
Very last. I think this is my last question. Are either of you in any way currently receiving any form of income, pension income, investment income, or any other types of compensation from any of the firms that are either involved in the Northern Pass project, Public Service, Northeast Utilities, NSTAR, any of the companies that would remotely have any sort of direct connection to the outcome of a process that might come before you?
No, I don't. And as again, I'm currently in a state of, in my current position, I'm an appointee in the government. If you go to the Secretary of State's website, you can see every year we have to do an annual disclosure. And short answer is no.
Thank you.
Mine's a little more complicated. I don't have any investments in Northeast Utilities or Public Service. I did at one time. I used to work at one time when I worked at Seabrook. They were owned by Public Service, then NU, and then subsequently that a a deregulated firm, which is now called NextEra, which was formerly Florida Power and Light. When I became a commissioner, I had to sell all the stock that I had in Northeast Utilities, which I did. Eventually, because of the time I worked there, I will be eligible for a pension that would come from Northeast Utilities. It's what's called a defined benefit plan, so nothing I could do as a commissioner would make that go up or down. And that issue's come up with a couple of other people that have worked at the commission in the past, and we have a legal position on it written by our general counsel, and if you'd like to see that, I'd be more than happy to share it with you.
Just one last thing. This bill that you both apparently testified at yesterday, you didn't, but you did, Mr. Scott. There's another bill floating around in the legislature at the moment. I think it's a Senate bill that talks about removing certain members of the Site Evaluation Committee from the Site Evaluation Committee process. One of those members is, in fact, the Commissioner of the Fish and Game Department, Director of the Fish and Game, and the other is the Commissioner of Cultural and Historic Affairs. Will each of you comment on your position on those positions being removed from the SEC?
Yeah, again, the Site Evaluation Committee is chaired by the Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Services. I work for him as the Director of Air Resources Division, so in that capacity, I've been working with legislators on, there's actually five bills that relate to the Site Evaluation Committee currently. So the discussion we've had so far is that we are opposed to those functions coming out of the Site Evaluation Committee. The intent of the Site Evaluation Committee, in our view, is to be an integrated one-stop shop, if you will, to evaluate all these things in one place, and we don't feel it's productive to take fish and game or historical resources out of that mix. So that's a short answer.
The commission doesn't have any specific opinion on this, so I'm speaking just on my own. My personal experience with the Site Evaluation Committee is a lot of the issues that come up directly impact or need the knowledge of people from fish and game and historical records. Historical records is like its own little world that not too many people know about, but it's a very significant portion of this. In fact, in the Groton Wind project, it was probably the factor that had the most delay on the project because they had to get all this stuff straight. So I wouldn't see the point of taking them off because we're just going to turn around and say, hey, help us out, because we don't know that's not our level of expertise. So.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing you both testifying against that bill when it comes out. Appreciate it. Appreciate your time. Thank you.